St. John's Lutheran Church of Northfield is celebrating its 150th anniversary in 2019. As part of this sesquicentennial, the church is conducting oral history interviews that will help to preserve the history of the church and the experience of our longtime members. Today is May 12th, 2019. I am Eric Sponheim from the Evangelism and Communications Committee. Today I'm joined by longtime St. John's members, Shar and Bill Carlson. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
When did you first join St. John's?
It was the winter of 94-95.
Yeah. Oh, right. You went to a previous church in town. Tell us that story.
We were members of Bethel from 73 until we moved over here. Our children were all confirmed over there. And then we reached a point in our life where it seemed to make sense. They were all gone, married. Some of them were married. It seemed to make sense that we wanted a change and wanted something a little bit different. Bethel was changing ministers, and we came over here. You know, when you live in a town as small as Northfield, you've got as many friends in both churches.
Right, and we discovered more people that were colleagues and friends and associates, and we shared soccer benches with Pastor Svensson when his son and our sons were playing soccer together. It was good, but there was a very, very much of closeness, and we knew lots of people here. So
you've got a couple of decades experience with each of those congregations now.
So we're very pleased to be here. I've been for a very long time.
Shar, you mentioned children. I had the pleasure of crossing paths with your daughter Andy at a previous church about 20 years ago. What other family members do you have? Tell us about your family and their involvement with St.
Andrea's our oldest. Yeah. Andy, she goes by. She's married and has one daughter. They live in Washington, D.C. She's a researcher with the Department of Agriculture in the Economic Research Division.
And our son Douglas is 2 years younger than her and heavily involved in the arts. So we have a family that goes typically, the men go into science and the women go into the arts and so on. So, but Doug is presently the artistic director of the Great River Shakespeare Festival and acts and directs plays around the country. Fortunately, our youngest son, Larry, was in the military, was an airborne ranger, and did very great things and got involved in some battles in places the U.S. wasn't supposed to be. And was injured in various ways, and as a result of those injuries, he ended up passing away much too early.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that's something that will stick with the rest of our lives and not... let us say no more. Mm-hmm. His ashes are interned at St. John. So there's a closeness here.
Mm-hmm. And where is Douglas?
Douglas lives in Minneapolis. He's married to Miriam Schultz Carlson. And they have three daughters, Helena, Anna, and Ava Rose. Interestingly enough, Mother's Day has always been, up until Larry passed away, a very happy time for us, because that's the time when we adopted him and he joined our family the Monday after Mother's Day.
Let the record show, this is Mother's Day that we're doing this interview.
So I always associate Mother's Day with the coming together of families.
So things change over time.
We'll talk more about that as the interview goes on. What role did St. John's have in your family life? You've already touched on that when you described joining St. John's at the stage in your family life where your children were leaving the nest. But say for the two of you now, we have a question later too about your roles in service to the church, and I know you're the good kind of money counters, not the idols in the temple, not the serpents in the temple. So tell us about some of those roles, the stewardship matters and so on.
Well, I guess the first thing, we came to St. John's because we knew a lot of people, we knew the pastor, but also we were very taken by the strength of the music program, the strength of the worship program. and the various activities and the role of St. John's in the community. And that has occurred and changed in various ways over years. And now we're in a very blessed time for St. John's. This is an amazing highlight. That
indeed.
It's certainly all our time at St. John's, which has been a few years, I guess.
Yep. We've done a number of activities over the years. I've been involved in a women's circle for a number of years, off and on in women. We've served in various committees. I've been on property and grounds. I headed up the columbarium committee, and that was a very interesting process. In 2006, we finally dedicated the columbarium, All Saints Day, November 20, 2006, with 80 niches, and since then we've added another 80 niches to it. So the columbarium was a very good project. It took a number of years to get it moving and to get the boxes built and get them installed, but that was a great project. It was about that time, 2004, that we got heavily involved in the community Christmas dinner. First just as team members being part of the congregation that volunteers, and then for about the last 10 years, along with two other couples, we've co-chaired the event.
And that's turned out to be a very joyous occasion. And for various reasons, we used to have large Christmas dinners with our entire family. Well, in particular, we had a situation where Doug's wife's parents were here in Northfield, and Doug was here in Northfield, and so that whole family used to have two Christmases on Christmas Day, and that didn't seem to make any sense. And then there was the opportunity to be involved with the Christmas dinner, so we ended up doing that. In my personal case, shortly after we joined the church, I was a member of the church council, looking at church outreach and connection with the churches. We established some connections with St. John's and the churches. We began to talk about St. John's being a reconciled church at that point. It wasn't time for that to occur back in the 90s, but we began pushing the idea, discussing the idea, and so forth, and then finally St. John's is now in that situation, and obviously we have an outstanding woman pastor at this point, back when we started, boy, people were saying, that should never happen for all sorts of reasons. And it's a blessing to see the kind of changes that have taken place and that kind of growth that's occurred in the church. Subsequently, I was involved in the church just several years ago on the church council and as church treasurer for a time. And so we've been involved in that. We've been involved in a bunch of other projects. We were involved in the first large fund drive back in, when was it? 2011. At that time, the church had incurred substantial debts and had two very large mortgages, and so much money was being taken out of the church. And so somebody asked us to be involved with this fund drive and said, oh yeah, by the way, you should be co-chairs. And we said, well, I don't know if we like fundraising that much. But at that point, the church contributed $900,000 to retire one of the mortgages, and that was amazing. We'd never seen the possibility of that happening. But what it did, it reduced the debt of the church substantially, so that the church could function, because so much of the money had been going to debt service at that point. So now we could begin to do programs and become a really more active and community related church.
Dave and Genevieve Korberg were co-chairs of that committee with us, and John Mockestead just did a beautiful pen and ink drawing for that campaign logo of Lazarus being unbound, and that was kind of the theme that we were working on, was unbinding the church from all of this heavy debt that was preventing us from being able to do any programming. The response, almost immediately, it was an $800,000 campaign, and we oversubscribed to that. Almost immediately, we reached that goal. We did not have to work hard. And I think it's very comparable to the Grace Overflowing campaign that we're having now. This is a church that really believes in its message of reaching out into the community in the case of the fund drive we were doing, we were paying off a piece of paper. We weren't doing anything, you know, it was all abstract. There was nothing concrete. But the congregation believed in that so that the church could move forward. And that's, I think, is why the church is in such a good, healthy position today.
Well, the other thing I think is important, that some previous fund drives and a fund drive to build the extension of the church were managed by an outside consultant who had all these great grandiose schemes of fundraising, big dinners, and all sorts of other things. And that was a problem in the church. And this first fund drive, we agreed right off that this church would, there'd be no money from the contribution would be spent on any kind of thing. In fact, Dave Neuger's company printed the pledge drive forms, and we meet at various places. I think we met in Dave's office sometime. He'd bring out
cookies
and beer sometimes for us. But the point was that all of the funds contributed would go for the debt reduction. And subsequently, the last fund drive, they adopted that exact same principle, that St. John's would not receive help from outside. Now, St. John's does have the advantage that there are several members in the church who were in fundraising at St. Olaf for a number of years.
And Carlton,
that's right. So there were professional fundraisers within the congregation. And so I think it was important that all that funding went to the purpose of the church.
So, indeed, it helps to have those in-house resources.
Exactly.
And you've already anticipated the next question too, which is others that you've worked with and have influenced you here at the church. Could you talk a little bit about that? You mentioned your co-chairs on some of the projects, and what would you like to put on the recording there about people who've influenced here that you worked with?
Well, let's start with the Christmas dinner, because that is 100 families coming together to serve about 350 people on Christmas Day. So they give up time for their thing, from their busy days to come here to the church and help make this such a success. Bill and I, John and Jay Ronisved and Howie Thorshine and Ted Peterson, I've been the core committee for a number of years. And it's an event now that kind of creates itself. We don't have to work that hard at getting the volunteers and
getting you got the machine, the proverbial machine is well oiled.
Right.
We all know what we have to do.
We make announcements and we sit and get people to sign on. I mean, at some point it's sort of interesting that we have an aging process going on here. And at some point, we will, as we say, age out. Char was in insurance and they life insurance, and they talked about the people aging out.
Health insurance,
but people eventually leave. Aging out, that is dying, and so you know we may have people aging out from this committee, but there's many others that will carry on the tradition. So, and I think that's true of so many things. At the same time, you have people in leadership positions in various places, and then they other people move in to take their places. And we see that going on a regular basis. And certainly at this point, we're at a very strong point. We have excellent leadership. The entire staff, the two pastors are particularly good. And we suffered with some less than ideal pastors at some previous times. And so now I think we're really at a high point.
Let's talk about worship a little bit. I know you came from 8:30 worship. We're doing this interview between services. What have you liked about worship and music at St. John's? And you know, sermons are certainly part of that. And but music as well. And so, what would you like to highlight about worship over the years?
Well, the worship service follows the strong tradition that came from the Roman Church and Martin Luther brought over to the Lutheran Church. And so that core is still there very much. And of course, the music, we're blessed with amazingly good music. We think when we go to other churches we visit and so forth that we recognize how blessed we are. And then of course, the messages from the pastor. And I think more importantly is the sense of communion with all the people within the church. I mean, there's a sense of feeling that goes on during the worship service that all these people are dedicated to participate in that worship. And I think that that spirit sort of has generated over time, and it's there. The Holy Spirit is there, as it were.
We have always, and when I use the word always, I don't use that lightly, been 830 people. And that started way back when we were in college, when I first arrived on campus up at Michigan Tech. I was not Lutheran, and I think it was a Methodist church that I went to down the road from the campus. You were at the little Lutheran church, Good Shepherd. We met, we started dating, and I started going to church with Bill, but it had to be 8:30 because you could then go to church and you could get a couple of hours of studying in before dinner. So it was always 8:30.
Right.
And then after we were married, it continued to be 8:30. Bill was working full-time at an engineer for Inland Steel. I was finishing up my bachelor's degree. We'd go to 8:30 service. You were working on a master's at night. We'd come home, we'd have some rolls and coffee, and then we would study for 2 or 3 hours. It had always been our routine. And it always seemed to work with the kids also. As the kids came along, we could go to 8:30 service, then we would go out for brunch, or we would go do something as a family, come back. When you were working on your doctorate and I was working on my master's, we had 3 kids. We'd go to 8:30 service because one of us studied on Saturday and one of us studied on Sunday. And so we needed that early church. So it's just kind of been a whole tradition.
There was a time in the early civil rights movement in particular that Martin Luther King at one point said, the 11 o'clock hour on Sunday morning is the most segregated hour in the whole week. We said, okay, we'll go to 8:30 church.
That's funny.
Right, obviously.
But that's remarkable that tradition you have as a couple of going to church together goes way back to the start.
To the very start of our relationship, right. Back in 1960.
Oh. Well, well, 60. Yeah, I'm just doing the math here. Well, that's
a few years.
Yeah, that's about as old as I am. Yeah. That's good. That's a good. It's a wonderful tradition. It's something really specific about worship now. Any favorite hymns or songs to call out if you like?
Well, Children of the Heavenly Father, of course, has always been one. The one that's labeled the sometimes called the St. Olaphan Church in All Stars.
Earth and All Stars. The start of the academic year kind of.
Yeah.
Earth and All Stars. The and I'm remembering parts of songs, but not the titles. There's one that Let It Begin With Me.
Let It Begin With Me.
Yeah, it's interesting that neither of us are very musical, very quantitative. Our sons sung in the St. Olaf choir, our daughters sing in the church choir on a regular basis. They're both very musical, and our youngest son Larry was also very musical, and so that we are not particularly well trained in music, and so.
I think.
But we love the hymns. We love to go to opera. We do love to go to the orchestra concerts and so forth. But we don't have the depth of understanding that so many of our fellow congregants have.
There was a period in our life when we were in Ann Arbor, and the church there had a contemporary worship service. This would have been the late 60s, early 70s. And there were a lot of wonderful, wonderful songs coming out then. The Medical Mission Sisters were kind of the leader in the church music of some. Lord of the Dance was one that I particularly, and it's now I think in the hymn book, but it was a period of time that just fit our family lifestyle, and it was at 8:30, so it fit our family lifestyle very, very well.
And our children were all at grade school at that point, and that was a way for us to be together with other families with children of the same age.
And that's one of the things I like about the service here is the mixture of the music and the hymns and how well the hymns fit in with the lessons and the sermon, and it all holds together so well. But they're not all traditional hymns, and it's just a really nice blend that fits really nice.
And there's a strong integration of young people into the service in various ways, readings and doing. Young people, I mean people in grade school and high school.
Today, one of the communion service serving the wine. I don't know.
Yeah.
What is she, 10, 12 years old?
I noticed
old?
That.
Yeah. I thought, that's wonderful.
That's beautiful, yeah.
Let's talk about change over time. So starting from the mid-90s to now, what are some of the trends you've noticed? Is there more of an attempt to make it a throughout the week full service church with the Wednesday meals, or just anything that comes to mind there about as you try to do a snapshot of now compared to, maybe that's hard to do being so intimately involved every Sunday, but try as you take a little step back, what kind of trends have come to mind?
It's become in a very positive way much more family welcoming, family oriented. I don't remember when we were first here that there were children's messages when we first came.
Yeah, yeah.
When Mark Johnson was pastor, he sometimes...
That's at Bethel.
No, Mark Johnson here. He gave just a wonderful children's sermon. He had the Trinity Tackle Box, the three trays that opened up.
Well, that's really appropriate.
Fishing
imagery.
He loved to fish. He loved to fish.
That was part
and he always had interesting things in it. But it was kind of hit and miss. If he was preaching, he did a children's sermon. But I think over time now, the church has moved. There's more younger families here. It's becoming more vibrant in that way. I love seeing the children running around. I counted this morning when they gave the blessings for the 11th grade, I think it was. I think there were 18, 20 names. Even a few years ago, it was 5, 6, 7 names.
Yeah, the youth program has gotten to be much stronger here.
And that is really good, because the youth is the future. The Wednesday night supper is the whole concept that the church should not divide the family on Wednesday, but should bring the family together.
Right. And the fact that reaches out to the community. There are a number of people who never come to worship service. Although I think some people have come to the Wednesday night dinners and they start showing up at church. Some of them do and some of them don't. It doesn't matter whether they do or not. I mean, the important thing that this is part of the community and part of what we do.
I think the church is so much more inclusive in becoming a reconciled in Christ Church. My feeling, at least, is we're doing more than just lip service to that. That we are inclusive. We're being encouraged to be inclusive. So in that sense, I've seen that the change.
We are blessed by having, at this point, two amazingly good pastors. And that really helps, I think it does, to have that message, that unifying leadership. It's there.
Are you concerned about the long-term trends at all? And I mean, very broadly speaking, sociologically, with church attendance,
sure.
I mean, or even if we limit it to the ELCA, which was founded about 30 years ago, down from, I mean, for a long time it was 5.1 million, and now it's what, 3.5?
Sure, right.
Phil, I know you're an economics professor, so the business model for the church, could you comment on that?
Well, it becomes much more difficult. There's all sorts of important outreach things that should be, certainly starting new churches, but outreach by providing the kind of Christian services that should be done to the broader community of the world, being a place that reaches out to the entire community. And to have the larger church being able to do that is I think, very important. And it's frustrating things. The church sponsors the Augusta Victoria Hospital, Lutheran Church, Augusta Victoria Hospital in Jerusalem, up on the hill. And we visited there by the time we've led students on abroad programs. And it's amazing ministry to particularly the Palestinian people. But it becomes more and more difficult to have enough resources to support that, to support other mission outreach activities in the world, to support activities in the United States, certainly bringing the word of Christ and making that part of the total message in the United States, bringing that together with other important positive messages. And there's so many negative messages that take place in the country that we need more outreach of the church to provide positive messages in combination with other churches that exist. And so I think the sociology of the country is changing so that there's less involvement in the church for all sorts of reasons. And I think that's unfortunate.
So there's some real strengths, even despite all those trends, there's some real right here at this particular congregation, there's some real strengths to build on. And what are some of your hopes for the future for the congregation? I know that wasn't on the list, so you're getting this unscripted.
My hope for the church in general and for St. John's in particular is that the church continues to find ways to remain relevant in the world and continues to be the first organization on the front lines when they're needed, that the resources will be there to do that. When we did some hurricane relief for Katrina, that would be 10 years, 12, 12 mm-hmm. 13 years.
05,
ago.
Yeah.
05. Well, we went on 2 years in a row, but it was the churches that were there. It wasn't FEMA that we couldn't find FEMA, but it was the churches. Churches, it was the Baptist church, the Methodist church.
They provided the leadership that connected us with work.
And I continue to see that. It's Catholic social services, Lutheran social services that are helping the immigrants, the refugees. Mm-hmm. And that's the important thing that has to remain as part of the mission of the church. And it is probably the thing that will help the church survive.
And St. John's is involved strongly in Community Action Center and other community activities. We have a very, very strong relationship with our Roman Catholic neighbors right next door, have some great worship service at Thanksgiving and so forth. I think that unity coming together like that is very important. And then trying to reach out to the broader community.
Hands-on ministry. We heard a sermon this morning from Jonathan Davis about the ministry to the widows that Tabitha had. It seemed like a really good example of what you were getting at there, Char. I'm getting into the, like, if this were NPR, this would be we've got a minute to go here, kind of final thoughts. What anything that we haven't highlighted that you'd like to call out, or on the prepared questions, the question was, what do you have any final reflections to add? So
we feel very fortunate to be in a community like Northfield, and in particularly in a spiritual community like St. John's, that over the years, at various points in their life, this church has been our rock.
Right. In particular, when you mentioned Mark Johnson again, when our son Larry died, Mark was so important for us. I'm sorry he's not part of this congregation anymore for whatever political reason. But on the other hand, we have amazingly good pastors here, and he's doing a wonderful service in Faribault. So but he was so important for us. And if you imagine, at a time when you have the ultimate tragedy of life.
Indeed.
To have somebody here that was helpful.
And not only Mark, but the entire congregation.
And his ashes are here, you said?
Yes.
His ashes are
his
here.
His ashes are in the columbarium.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
It was an interesting project and a good project to be doing.
Do you mind just touching on the 8:30 thing a minute? Because that was... You know, last summer, was it last summer? I think, yeah, last July, there was this, the pastor shook us all up and said, okay, sorry, there's only one service. And I'm a preacher's kid, and my dad, it was just like here, there was 8:30 and 10:30 or something like that, you know, and there's an education hour in between. And it is just kind of a challenge in building unity and, you know, having people connect more when they, for you get, for your week just plays out. Some people 8:30, mm-hmm. others works much better to go later. Maybe we should just, like, this is kind of merging into, like, separate, like, what advice can we give to the pastors or the council or somebody, like, to
do
keep,
it again.
You know, do it again, like the do July, the shake
All right,
up, the
it
July
shook,
shake up.
It shook up our routine. Yeah. Get up, I have my cup of coffee, and we, you know, we have a Martha scone, and then we come to church. I don't read the paper. I read the paper after I get home. When they shook it up, and I think it was 10, you know, get up, and I'd get the paper half read before I came to church. And that shook my routine up. On the other hand, there are the 8:30 people and the 10:45 people. There are also another set of people. There are what some people refer to as the upstairs people and the downstairs people. The people with children in Sunday school and that are the downstairs people, and the people who are the ones attending the adult forums or the Bible study, the coffee hour, are kind of the upstairs people. And all of a sudden, when you have one service and one coffee hour,
everybody's
together.
Although the reality is that our present lifestyle of Americans, certainly people in Northfield, is that on weekends people go all sorts of places. If you live in Minnesota, you go to the lake, or as it were. And so that change in lifestyle during the summer period is what happens.
Well, if they shake us up this year, if they shake us up again in July and it's 10 o'clock, I'll be looking for you to sit by you.
All right. Yeah, provided we're here, we're not at the lake. Well, we do have a place on Lake Superior that we go to.
Well, that's a good place to be in July.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's a good place to be in the wintertime too, actually.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for doing this project. This is great. I think it's important.
We'll be sharing some highlights as the sesquicentennial goes on. And this is grist for our mill, though. Right. And I really enjoy talking with you.
So how many interviews have you scheduled? It must be a huge job.
We've probably done 12 to 15 mm-hmm. so far, maybe more. And in the bank, we call them. They all, once they're on the tape. Uh-huh. And I'll tell you more when we turn off the recording here.